From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life.
I'm Pete Stoughton.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Whether your mental or physical wellness brings you to the top of the highest peaks,
or you need a little help with the climb,
The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch.
Well, I spoke with conflict resolution expert Priya Parker. She's on a quest to help people and organizations create transformative gatherings. She says gathering matters because it's through each other that we figure out what we believe. Priya Parker is helping us take a deeper look at how anyone can create collective meaning in modern life, one gathering at a time. She's a master facilitator, strategic advisor, and acclaimed author of the new book, The Art of Gathering, How We Meet and Why It Matters. She's also the host of the New York Times podcast, Together Apart. Parker has spent 15 years helping leaders and communities and help them have complicated conversations about community and identity and vision at moments of transition. She's trained in the field of conflict resolution, and she's worked on race relations on American college campuses and on peace processes in the Arab world, Southern Africa, and India. Priya Parker, welcome to The Mountain Life. It's great to have you.
It's so great to be here.
I would love for you to set the stage because you're two families that you describe in your TED Talk. I mean, what a great way to roll out the importance of the correct types of gatherings and how we might navigate and negotiate our way through difficult, whether it's conflict resolution or just being with our families during the holidays. Tell us about your two family situations.
Situation is a good word. I'm biracial, I'm bicultural. My mother is an Indian immigrant to the U.S. and my father is white American from Iowa. For the first kind of 12 years of their relationship, their marriage to each other, they were kind of each other's source of adventure and even rebellion. They lived in different countries. I was born in Zimbabwe because the closest good hospital that would accept an interracial couple at the time was in Zimbabwe. And eventually they moved back to the U.S. and eventually settled down into Virginia. And within 3 years, they had separated, divorced, and each remarried other people. And I was their only child, and they had joint custody. So every 2 weeks, I would go back and forth between these two homes. And I would leave on a Friday afternoon from my mother's house, mother and stepfather's home. And it was, and still is, an Indian, British, vegetarian, Buddhist, New Agey, Hinduish, theosophist, depending on the day, incense-filled, Democrat, progressive, liberal family. And I would drive about a mile and a half and enter my father and stepmother's home. And it was and still is a white evangelical Christian, conservative, Republican, twice a week church going, meat eating, softball playing family. And I was a part of both. And, you know, I joke, my name is Priya Parker, and you can kind of guess which side is which. I became, perhaps not surprisingly, a conflict resolution facilitator, but my entire life I've been interested in and aware of when and why and how we come together, and also when and where and how we come apart.
Absolutely. We use avoidance so often when we go to family gatherings. In my family, we always joke about Thanksgiving and sitting around the table. And we have, you know, much the same, although, you know, I don't come from a biracial family in terms of the way we view the world and our politics and our religion are very divergent, which is, I always say to myself, it's so strange that we share the same blood and the same DNA, and yet we are so different. And so the strategies that we often use, which is avoidance of conflict, they kind of fly up in the face of what you are trying to do, which you are trying to help people not only have conflict resolution, but have transformative gatherings. And, what a wonderful thing. It's a tall order, though.
Well, you know, part of what I'm looking at, and in part because it's my own life and my own life story, and I've been trying to figure this out for me, right? We often are attracted to work where, that helps us answer selfishly our own questions, right. Is I began to realize, you know, when my parents announced that they were separating, I was shocked. Everybody I knew was shocked because they never fought. Mm-hmm. And I began to realize, and as a conflict resolution facilitator, you know, perhaps ironically, I'm conflict averse. Like, people start fighting, I want to get out of the room. Mm-hmm. And I've had to almost train myself physiologically to stay. And part of what I realized and navigated through kind of these three families, three being the first with my mother and father, if that was one family created, and then the second and third, which is each of their own kind of new invented families, mm-hmm. was that, if I'm interested in meaningful connection and gatherings that create meaningful connection, and I knew from my own experience that meaningful connection is as threatened by unhealthy peace as by unhealthy conflict. Mm. And so part of what I'm exploring here and in this book that I wrote called The Art of Gathering is, how do we begin, despite our differences, to meaningfully connect without all having to be the same?
If you're just joining me on The Mountain Life, my guest is Priya Parker. As she said, her new book is called The Art of Gathering, How We Meet and Why It Matters. I think that, Priya, when we gather, if we are going to go into a space of understanding and empathy, we'll find out that we all actually have a lot of things in common, which we've been driven to think that we have nothing in common with those on the other side. And even this division between sides, right, has created that feeling. But is that what we want to do to really have something transformative? Like, I often think, well, if I just go to those places that I know I have in common with this person who feels like a stranger to me, for what they believe, even though they're in my family, in a way, it's not really confronting these issues that might create transformation. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, so just to step back, I am really interested in when groups come together. So I define a gathering as any time three or more people come together for a purpose with a beginning, middle, and end. So a gathering is a wedding, it's a funeral, it's Thanksgiving dinner, it's a board meeting, it's a town hall meeting, really, and it's a classroom. Anytime three or more people are coming together and kind of have to coordinate, and then a Thanksgiving dinner or in a Christmas or a Hanukkah or a, you know, choose your family reunion, coordination may mean like conversational coordination, right? Like, mm-hmm. How do we talk in ways that help us connect to each other, but do it in a way where we're not losing ourselves, right? How can I navigate this conversation with somebody who perhaps I abhor their beliefs, but maybe because of they're in my family or because of our childhood connection, I still care about them. And one of the things that I learned as I was doing research for this book, you know, I interviewed over 100 types of gatherers in all types of contexts, a God-optional rabbi, a priest, a photographer that has 7 minutes with the head of state and 10 bodyguards in the room and has to figure out how to get that shot, how to create that transformation so that the head of state or the president or the prime minister gives them that shot, kind of softens, even against her own interest. And what I learned from each of these people was that those who were able to create transformative experiences with and for others had a specific purpose. They knew why they were doing it. They didn't start with the form. They started with what I call a specific disputable purpose. Meaning, rather than starting with what should we cook for, you know, Christmas dinner this year, to actually start with the question, what is the need in our family this year? And how might we gather around that need? And so a huge part of, you know, rather than trying to figure out what to say to your uncle, what I'm actually, I sort of stepping back and saying, in this group of people that I care about, how might we want to spend our time this year and why? Like, is what we need, so for the political conversation, for some people navigating actually facing this conversation of, you know, who'd you vote for, may be the need that you have. But I would say to actually ask first, what is it that I want from this connection? What is it that I want out of this relationship? What is the most important thing to me? And how might we structure our time together so that we enjoy each other without pretending that there aren't differences?
Without pretending that there aren't differences. That's good. That's good. So I'm thinking about, conversation prompts or questions posed, or as you mentioned, creating togetherness through symbols, where you give the example of bringing something to the meeting, something that has helped to get them through this year, and then share whether it's a story or a thing with everyone.
Yes. So whether it's on, Zoom and you're doing this virtually, or whether you are doing this outside socially distanced, or whether you're doing it within a pod, indoors, meaningful gatherings, once you have a purpose, deeply benefit from just the right amount of structure. So we tend to underhost our gatherings, in part because we don't want to impose or seem too bossy or kind of assume that everybody else wants to do it the way you want to do it. And particularly, I mean, even more so, I would say on kind of Zoom calls, you log in for a virtual birthday party or a happy hour. And the novelty in the first few minutes may be sweet to see people. And then after a while, you're just kind of awkwardly staring at each other. These gatherings really benefit for some amount of structure. And so I'll give a couple of examples. So conversation prompts are an example of simple structure. And that could be something like, this year for Thanksgiving, I did a virtual Zoom with one set of parents and with my in-laws. We had three parts of structure. One, and it's just gonna help the group coordinate. The first part is we had a cocktail hour, and we did that in part to give it a kind of a focus and a feel. We asked everyone to dress up. My brother-in-law and father-in-law both wore suspenders. Like, even that, just the delight of seeing people wearing the same clothes, it's not rocket science, but it actually shifts, it creates a sense of togetherness. But then on that cocktail hour, my husband had asked each of us the week before to send a photo, two photos, one photo of a moment of beauty or a moment of joy from 2020, and to send a photo from a moment in our life that may have been actually worse than 2020. and it kind of flipped the script, and he collected it and he just put it into very simple, PowerPoint. And we started the first hour, and each person went around, and we saw the photo, and each person shared like the best moment of 2020. And we remembered that 2020 also, despite all of its pain, has also, for each of us, even if it was just a small, simple moment, had a moment of joy. Like, the year is not a monolith. Mm-hmm. And that we have had difficult times in years past. And in my family, there was people found photos from their childhood, like a class photo of the year they were bullied, right? And we each learn, even though we were all part of a family, we each also kind of saw a different side of ourselves. I learned something about my father-in-law I didn't know. Someone else, and you're also chuckling through these terrible moments, in part because, this was the year when I was so depressed that when the alarm went off, I put my head over my pillow and started crying because I just like did not want to get out of bed because I hated my job so much. Mm. And you also see the growth that you've had, right? I no longer feel that way. So ask a specific question that allows people to show another side of themselves. A couple other examples, particularly on the political side, what is something you've changed your mind about?
That's a good one. Yeah, that's such a wonderful question, because so often we accuse others of not changing their mind or not having an open mind. And yet we have to look at ourselves and decide whether or not we actually endeavored to change our own minds. So on Thanksgiving this year, it was just my husband and I kind of impromptu thought about doing a Zoom call with a couple of cousins and a couple siblings, my mom, and I wanted it to be really informal because these family reunions have been sort of painful, right? in a way. And yet, because I didn't have a purpose, my conversation prompt was tell me something interesting that you're cooking this year that you haven't done before, or what's your new twist on Thanksgiving? Well, it turned out that no one really had a new twist, and the conversation fell really flat. And it fell flat until we decided to jump ship and just all start cooking together with our video screens on and not mute ourselves. And it was so much fun to be sort of, a fly on the wall of in my mother's kitchen, for example.
Yes.
And then the conversation started flowing.
Yes.
So
it's beautiful
what you're saying.
And part of what I hear in your story is you adapted. Like, I, just because I'm a facilitator doesn't mean that every question I ask always, is brilliant or lands well. Like, you looked at the need in front of you. So again, the question is, what is the need here? And in that group, no one had any new novel recipes, but you didn't say, okay, let's exit. You said, okay, so what would be interesting right now? And you kind of found your way through sync cooking, right? S-Y-N-C-H cooking.
Mm.
Where you were all like, get a little peep into each other's kitchens when you're not in each other's kitchens, right? You're not having your mother like elbow you out and saying, get out of here, get out of here, get out of here. I need some space. you're kind of, it's this kind of new experience to all, whether it's cooked together or, I know cooks or chefs who are starting to teach virtual classes rather than in-person classes. And rather than having to set up all of their own, 30 little test kitchens in their studios or in their classrooms, what a novel thing it is for them to get to see their own students' pantries.
Yes.
Oh, right. Nice. So there's all of these specific ways. I have in the Art of Gathering, one of the 100 gatherers I interviewed is a woman named Ida Benedetto, and she's an underground experience designer. She creates these kind of experiences that help people get out of their comfort zone. This is well before COVID. So in New York City, every year she hosts this thing called the Timothy Convention, and it's a fake conference at the Waldorf Astoria where 100 people show up in all dressed up in black tie, and they get prompts like, there's a wedding on the third floor, crash it and give a toast to the bride. And I called her up recently and I said, Ida, how do we begin to create meaning and adventure in a moment of COVID? And how would you help people think about holiday parties? And she said, rather than thinking about a holiday party, think about a holiday adventure. And the way to move from party and adventure are two things, motion and mission. And what she meant is she could get people moving and have a mission. And the mission can be made up. She said on her 30th birthday, she had a friend who was doing a photography project where they were trying to find beautiful keyholes across the city. And so she invited, she made this up, 10 friends. They all took their phones, camera phones, and for 2 hours they went around and tried to find the most beautiful keyholes and took photos of them. And she said years later people said it was one of the best parties they'd ever been to. And she was like, that's so strange. Why was it so amazing? And she said, because we weren't just finding keyholes, we were on a mission. And we were in motion. And right now it's kind of cold, but you're moving and there's a mission. And so part of this is whether what you do, what you did, which is, you're all cooking together in each other's kitchens, or you're all baking together, or you're all, you can now sync watch a movie together. Netflix and has a new app where you can actually all watch a movie simultaneously and, comment on like a text thread. There's so many new ways of kind of quote unquote being together in this strange time.
You know, what's interesting about this is that, the nuances of this time will permeate really the rest of our lives, I think, you know.
Absolutely.
I mean, and we may never gather again the way we gathered before. And hopefully this could be a good thing, a good twist, because, you know, what you're talking about here is the meaningful gathering, the mission, the movement, the, you know, applying creativity to the way that we gather, because you can't fall back on talking about the beautiful food on the table if you can't think of something to say. You know, when you're on a Zoom call, you have to, you know, you're just, as you say, just staring at each other in these boxes. And so, you know, when we do go back after there's herd immunity and all of that, a year from now, we're back in these gatherings. What do you see for the way that we'll gather in the future?
I think one of the things that this time is revealing is that gathering is something that is precious. It's something we ought not take for granted. And I think part of, we're seeing this on Zoom, but I believe this is also true for in-person gatherings, that when we actually have and are clear on what our specific need is for a gathering, we start with the purpose, not with the form. We don't start with figuring out what we're serving, but we actually figure out why are we bringing people together? And then how might we do this? That it'll be, that that we'll actually be more intentional about our gatherings. You know, I often joke, like, give people in your life the art of gathering, in part because it gives everybody permission to have a little bit more structure in their gatherings, to be okay that you're, you know, that you care, to show that you've thought a little bit about how we might do this, rather than everybody just kind of being vague and drinking beer in the living room.
Yes. My guest is Priya Parker. Her new book is The Art of Gathering, How We Meet and Why It Matters. This is all so great, Priya. I just, before I let you go, I wanted to ask you a question about your New York Times podcast, Together Apart. It sounds like something that you've, you know, definitely started since COVID. How's it being received? And obviously you welcome these people on your podcast, like Ida, to talk about different ways of gathering.
So every, you know, we were working on a podcast that was supposed to be called Gathering with Priya Parker with the New York Times. And in March, a producer texted me and said, a show about gathering now sounds like a horror film. We need, and we paused. And I kept on getting emails and questions over text and over Instagram. You know, how do we do this? Do I cancel my wedding? Do I do it on Zoom? Do we cancel our fundraiser that is 90% of our revenue every year because we can't gather? Like, what do we do? And so we quickly pivoted and launched the show called Together Apart, where every week I talk to one person around the country, a teacher, a high school class trying to graduate, an older sister worrying about her 18-year-old younger sister not having prom or graduation or being able to plan her birthday, and just look at one specific gathering and how they might actually navigate it, make it more meaningful, make it very them when you can't necessarily be physically together in the ways that we were before.
Oh, I can really see this transforming just the way we go about even thinking about getting together. What a wonderful thing. Priya Parker, thank you so much for joining me on The Mountain Life. This has been great, and it's so timely, and hopefully it'll help us navigate through the next couple of weeks until the holidays.
I hope so, and it's such a pleasure to be in conversation with you.
All right, take care. Bye, Priya.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Mountain Life.
If you enjoyed the show, make sure you subscribe, rate us, and leave us a comment.
If you have an idea for a future show, email us at mountainlife@kpcw.org.
We hope you'll bring your green smoothie and join us next week for The Mountain Life.